Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Modern Cotton Story podcast, sponsored by E3 Sustainable Cotton. I'm Ray Daniels, North American Seed Sustainability Manager for BASF, as well as the manager of the E3 Sustainable Cotton program and the host of today's program. Also today, I'm joined by Gerti Textile Organization partner, Bob Anishak, who's been a longtime co-host here on the program. So, Bob, how are you doing today?
Ray, I'm doing great. Thanks. It's a beautiful day here in Nashville. It's coming east, so it'll be, it's really nice. So thanks.
Well, thank you. Well, I'm looking forward to that if it's nice weather, please send it our way. It's,
I will.
Many folks are wishing for rain for it to stop raining. I mean, here in the Atlanta, Georgia area, it has been a bit hot, so excited for it to finally be cooling off, but it's been a great week so far. Let's get started with today's program. I am really excited about today's program because we've got an incredible guest, Rowan Atwood, who is a leading expert on sustainability and a well-known environmental advocate. And on the podcast today, we're going to talk with Rowan about a good question, which is, how do you define sustainability? But before we get into that, Rowan, welcome to the show. How are things with you?
Things are going good. Thanks, Ray. It's good to be here, calling in from Greensboro, North Carolina, and I'm always excited to convene with, you know, like-minded folks. I listen to your podcast often to just hear how things are progressing on BASF front and the E3 front, so happy to connect with you guys and all the listeners.
Great. Well, we're glad you're here. Thank you for joining. Rowan, you've worked for some major apparel brands and retailers in your career. You not only have an extensive background in the apparel industry, but you're also a well-known advocate for sustainable agriculture, textiles, and apparel. I also understand that that soil health is a particular interest of yours. So that's a lot. That's a pretty packed resume that you got there. So why don't maybe tell us a little bit more about your background and about, you know, where you've been and where you're going. In the coming weeks.
Yeah. Happy to. It's been more than 20 years, getting gray, working in, you know, different business organizations with just a focus on, you know, how to make them more lean and green. You know, I think it was, originally I was first in at American Apparel, the t-shirt manufacturer in downtown Los Angeles, you know, formerly in the Rykoff building there on the corner of 7th and Alameda, where the focus was really sweatshop free, made in America, made in downtown LA. That was the big tagline for American Apparel all those years. But then I was moved south to Orange County and had a good run with Etnies, the action sports footwear company, where we did things like launch the Jameson Eco 2, which was a fully loaded, all these sustainable attributes in a pair of canvas upper shoes, vulcanized shoes. We combined with a reforestation campaign with Costa Rican Maleku natives. Each pair of etnies that you bought would we'd buy a shoe, plant a tree. So it's kind of some exciting stuff there to combine sustainable product with cause-driven marketing early in my career. You know, and then more recently, I've been with sort of the VF Contour and Wrangler Lee sort of animal organization in all of its iterations. The brands, really, we had a really strong program with the Wrangler Rooted collection where we were profiling different growers, E3 growers, to be in fact, and sort of their contributions to land stewardship and ultimately made in the USA, a product that resonated with a lot of Wrangler consumers. But I spent time on with a variety of different brands in the consulting side, working with Annie's Mac and Cheese, Radio Flyer, Walmart, Colgate Palmolive. And more recently, I've been working with Tractor Supply Company, the farm and feed retailer, to help decarbonize their operations. And I've been with those guys for a year. But I'm in the middle of a transition right now. As you caught me in this in-between space, I'm kind of a free agent at the moment, making a move again, staying in retail, but more of a focus on grocery and food service with a position with Ahold Delhaize. I start in about a week from now, so counting the days. If you're not familiar with Ahold Delhaize, that's the parent company of Food Lion, Hannaford, and Stop and Shop. So some really strong food retail brands here in the U.S. But always with a focus on sustainability and how do we infuse sustainability into the organization, right? Whether it's bolt-on, embedded in, whether it's, you know, a series of service providers helping to drive, you know, goals and initiatives. How do you have that conversation with leadership to develop a platform that's going to yield the result that you're looking for, whether that be around sustainable products, supply chain impacts, or the social, the S of the ESG, right? And how employees and team members are treated, respected, and inspired on you know, within the organization on a daily basis.
Rowan, you know, I've always been impressed by your background and your creativity, ideas, thinking. You're really progressive about everything, but you're also really hands-on with a lot of what you do. In fact, I think the first time we met was actually on a farm. Okay. And I think it was one of the Wrangler rooted photo shoots, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Right. And anyway, it was really, I've always seen you as having, you know, one foot in the farm and one foot at retail in one form or another. And it's, but again, very, very much focused on doing, you know, in addition to having the good ideas. So, look, I'm going to ask you this question though, and it's not loaded, but just to cut to the chase, to Ray's point earlier, how do you define sustainability?
Okay. I'll give you my personal answer and then I'll kind of go into professional answer. I mean, I think for me, really sustainability is an indicator of progress for that more holistic world where everybody wins, right? It's a world where we see the interconnectivity of human systems and natural systems, where we have a more complete view of how business operates with an optimistic perspective that we can make more widgets with fewer inputs, but also live side by side near rivers, wetlands, and oceans without polluting, without harm to natural systems, to the people that are responsible for making products deep within our supply chains. You know, in this context, I think sustainability is really about this continued commitment to unlocking both social and environmental value that results in innovation, you know, healthier people populations, you know, and the best of, you know, what I think of conscious capitalism. So that's more for me personally. I think when I round that out and think about what sustainability means for the organization, you know, it's, there is some synergy right now around the term ESG, environmental social governance. And there's plenty of articles out there and people commenting on, you know, how ESG is the new sustainability. What is the true tenets of sustainability versus ESG and the origins of those different terms? And we can unpack that a little bit more. But I think that whether we're talking sustainability or this emerging counterpart of ESG, there are some fundamental things that happen within a sustainability commitment or program within an organization. Number one, goals and targets, right? It is the language of leadership. It drives the activity that translates into the course of action for over the next quarter, the next year, or the next time horizon. And so, you know, goals and targets embedded within a sustainability program are absolutely essential to drive the overall focus and concentration. Pillars, those focus and concentrations need to be true and authentic to the organization, right? And so what is it that we're going to do, focusing in on the most material things, those things that matter the most to my constituents, my stakeholders? And how do we then, and the third component to this is definitely track and measure and report out on that progress. Like, we need to be able to demonstrate where we are today, the vision of where we're going, and then ultimately, what is that process? And we're not always going to get it right. Organizations are imperfect, much like the human mind, right? So I think when we think of how orgs are going to adopt sustainability into the fabric of the organization, it's not always clean. It can be messy. It can be a struggle. It can be, but it can also be a celebratory moment. And there are these opportunities within the org and as a working professional and in a community of people that are all rallied around the same focus, there's these moments where you really see and manifest the wins, right? Where you achieve that big objective, where you're able to put a solar array on top of a building or put a sustainable product into market or to make a meaningful contribution to an organization that's underfunded, and you just created all kinds of new capacity for a group of people that have been underserved. You know, there are ways to report and share on that are essentially the journey of the org. And it's important that transparency is a part of all current day sustainability platforms.
Wow, I appreciate that, Rowan. Thank you. That's an incredible definition, both personally and professionally, in the way you look at it. I love how you casted us moving forward and thinking about a broader impact on all stakeholders, and including the environment and how we do so. And I think the comment about ESG and accountability and how we track that, the performance, is critical as well. But let's talk about the overall health of the sustainability movement, though, right? there seems to be a great support for sustainability programs in the industry, but much of the apparel business still employs fast fashion and really carbon intensive supply chain sourcing. So how much of that is marketing as opposed to real action? And also, to your experience, what do brands really think about when it comes to sustainable cotton these days?
Yeah. There's a lot going on, right? Like, I think that some of the things that that companies are responding to today are because of emerging regulation, right? That's actually part of the sustainability to the ESG sort of shift in focus, just meaning that with currently, if people aren't familiar with the publicly traded companies that are subject to Securities and Exchange Commission rules, the new SEC proposed rule for climate disclosure has, well, quite frankly, gotten a lot of people excited, interested, upset, you name it. Yeah. It's one of the human emotions and pull it down because it is, it's all over the boards. Because what is it asking people to do? It's asking people to think long-term about the implications of carbon and the increasing of surface temperatures on the planet Earth in a way that, how does that affect your business? How does that really affect your business if we have consistent and persistent droughts in certain regions? How does it affect your business if the temperatures are just fundamentally different in a lot of the geographies that typically have a summer season and a fall season and a winter season? How do all these effects of changing climate and the corollary environmental challenges affect your business? And that's a tough question to ask, right? Because you're thinking about the financial implications. You're asking to be disclosing around the financial implications. You're thinking of it through the stakeholder lenses, right? And everything that the broader stakeholder community has and the views that they have about your business operating in the world and their expectations about what you should or should not be doing, all that really comes into focus when you think of having to report and transparently share what are those most material things. You know, regulation, and the investment community has been very vocal in this space. And, you know, we're thinking back to 1994 when John Eltington, you know, brought forward the triple bottom line and thinking people, profit, planet. You know, that was really precursory thinking to actuarial accountants looking at the numbers saying, wow, climate change is a challenge. We are actually experiencing a significant amount of risk here because we're having to pay out on insurance claims that are related to climate that we have never seen before, right? So bringing into focus the implications of climate in a way, both through a regulatory perspective, through an investor perspective, you know, and we're all looking at what our competitors do, but the real voice, you know, kind of lives with the customer and what is the customer thinking, feeling, and how is that how are they driving, you know, the demand signal throughout the market for sustainable products, services, and how does that translate to our business? So, you know, I think that there is the platforms that are deep, serious, deep green and working towards that decarbonization to satisfy one of those business drivers, right? Whether it be the goals, the regulatory environment, their investor, the investor community, or whether they're trying to respond to, you know, to customer demand. I mean, you are right. There is certainly fluff. You know, I think there is a certain amount of concern that not all programs are equal, right? And how do you track and measure those programs? How do you look at one organization's sustainability platform next to another and determine? And there's all kinds of ratings and ranking agencies out there that do that type of work, that try and put in numeric value to the sustainability performance of one individual organization within an industry, respective of its competitors, or even year over year, respective of itself. And, you know, even those rankings and ratings frameworks, you know, they too get challenged, right? Like, I think that we are an ever creative bunch, you know, changing the goalposts on what's meaningful and important for good reason, because our knowledge of the world changes, like our knowledge of microplastics in the environment changes, our knowledge of PFAS chemistry changes, right? Our knowledge of agriculture and how to work on farm changes, and how to infuse sustainability best practices into agricultural production or into business operations or into the built environment in general, right? Like the way that building products evolve over time. And, you know, we have new and novel battery backups associated with solar systems. How can we create resilient retail in a world where you know, the there's a little bit more natural disaster upset that's going on. All of these things, I think, you know, speak to, you know, the depth and authenticity of a program. And you can manage it by the numbers and focus on decarbonization, water, waste impacts. But there's also a way of showing up in the community and really responding to deep stakeholder concern and critique and leaning into that to really create the most amount of value. And I think that's where those programs shine. They feel different. Those companies feel different. There's some leaders out there. They're doing great work. And there are a bunch of folks that are doing minimal amount of work, but talking about it really loudly. But I think that, you know, when it comes to cotton, which is one of, you know, my favorite topics, is the story of our lives. Like it is the thing that I think that is really a holy grail, right? Because it's a biogenic natural fiber. It is rain fed most of the time, except in certain geographies where that's not available below certain, you know, annual inches of rain. But it's the kind of thing that where it can curb this bigger challenge of microplastics, right? Like cotton doesn't shed the way the polyester does. So there's a real love affair with a natural fiber that's soft, comfortable, that's breathable, and that ultimately is exchanging with a natural environment on a regular basis. You know, the natural part of cotton is probably one of its big benefits and attributes, right? Like this is a crop that farmers grow in the United States. I think we can be really proud of the growers that are out there leading in best practice. Even our PBID, you know, permanent bale ID tracking number system is something to be heralded in other geographies of the world. They don't necessarily have that opportunity for traceability and connectivity with fiber and fiber quality in a way that we do in the United States. And I think it's something that we should be really proud of. I don't know if all organizations understand the nuance and the beauty of sustainable cotton fiber or sustainable cotton fiber programs. A lot goes into it. You know, you guys know, Ray, you know, Bob, you guys know more than both, you know, the effort that goes into building such a program. And I think that it's the type of thing where we have the opportunity to communicate all of the benefits of the work that happens behind the scenes. The farmers have an opportunity to be seen and recognized for their practices. I'm not sure if we're totally connecting with brands and customers on that message today, but we can. I think we can, and there's that opportunity. And, you know, I think it's been a wild ride for everybody just in terms of the past 2 years, COVID, post-COVID, you know, COVID light, you know, now what's next, right? Like, I think there's just a lot of confusion in terms of, you know, consumerism, customer, retail, shopping, and how to interact with the world from a human perspective. But, you know, there's things that bring us home. There's things that connect and create, you know, meaningful opportunities. And I think cotton is one of them. I think cotton is, because of its comfort and because of its historical origins, I think there's such an important way for that cotton story to be told. Yeah.
Ron, you've been a real supporter and advocate of cotton, I know, over the years, and was curious. I've been of the opinion that some brands pick on cotton unfairly.
Yeah.
When it comes to sustainability. And I'd be interested in your opinion on that. And also, what do we do about greenwashing in the apparel business?
Yeah, right.
Big questions, right?
Yeah. Greenwashing, string them up. No, just kidding. That's terrible.
whoa.
Relax already. Come on. It's just a podcast. No. I mean, look, I think there needs to be a little bit of policing of some of the messaging for sure and the attributes, right? Because we, you know, not all things are equal. You've got some brands that are working really hard to infuse sustainable cotton, sustainable attributes into their products. And you've got others that are working less hard and they get to market the same and what have the same customer reaction. That's not fair. So, you know, I do think, you know, there is a role here, you know, as the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, starts to embark on rewriting some of the rules around green marketing guidelines, which haven't been updated since 2011. We know this is coming down the pike. We know that this is something that's going to be evaluated. You know, there should be, you know, a dedicated section for natural fibers and understanding how to communicate about natural fibers, you know, and it's right. Like, you know, I think, you know, to that point of just general fairness to the customer, right? Because That's the real tricky part. It's not really fairness from one competitor to the next. It's fairness to the customer, because you cannot be selling something on a false value proposition, because that entire exchange of marketplace, consumer product, trust, and commerce starts to erode and fall apart, right? Like, I think that essentially those elements have to be restored. And I think that there needs to be a higher level of transparency. Look, we can do this. You know, blockchain is now emerging, and I'm not saying it's mature, but blockchain is now moved out of its infancy stage, and, you know, has the opportunity to serve us in a certain way. But, you know, we have enough mechanisms in place to track, measure, and report and share the origins of products, the sustainability performance of products, you know, and just the real skinny, like, let's get to the, you know, what impact does this have? And I think some of the certification programs can grow in that capacity, but I think that there needs to be added traceability as a must have for future sustainable attributes, which hopefully will minimize some of the greenwashing, you know, challenges that we have. But, you know, you had a precursory question, which is like picking on cotton, right? Like,
right. Wow. Yeah, I think they do.
What does it mean to be like, you know, a cotton grower in the world today? And I think it's tricky because there's so many geographies and different practices. And you take a U.S. operation or a, you know, a Greek farmer out of Thessaloniki, right? Or a smallholder grower out of Africa or India, geography, Pakistan, you name it, whatever these cotton growing geographies, that the way that they interact with the land does differ. You have heavily mechanized in the United States. You've got other stuff that is smallholder driven. And I think that, you know, generally speaking, where cotton has really gotten a bad rap early on was its excessive use of water consumption, right? And I think when you start to peel back the layers of that, it is true, there's places historically that have used large amounts of water to irrigate cotton, but things have gotten a lot better since those original, you know, data points, right? And not all cotton is equal. So that means that actually a majority of the global cotton supply is rain fed. It's not irrigated at all. So it's not exactly accurate to take one touch point, one data point, you know, I don't know what it was, like 10,000 liters of water per kg of cotton equivalent. You know, that's not,
it's all over the web, unfortunately, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Everybody loves to share that one. It's like,
yeah,
well, that would only be true for maybe say 13% of the global cotton supply that actually irrigates. And of that 13%, you know, then you'd have to really peel back the layers by region, and who's using what type of irrigation technology. And it's amazing because we've seen so much innovation in irrigation technology itself, right? From pivot sprinklers to subsurface drip to drip, you know, to even advanced nozzles that, you know, on sprayer units that will actually, you know, apply different crop protection chemicals with, you know, 27% greater efficacy, right? So like the evolution in that space, in that technology space is not, I'm not sure the broader community of stakeholder critique has been, is aware of the evolving technology and where we've been from 1970 to present, right? And there's been a massive amount of on-farm innovation that has made growing cotton or other crops to be more sustainable. And let's face it, I mean, ideally, if a farmer has access to other markets, we want them to be growing other crops too, because crop rotation, especially a complex rotation, three different crops in the same field over a five-year timeframe, is exactly the best practice that we would be looking for to increase soil health and to increase the vitality of that soil and preserve the vitality of that soil for future generations.
So Rowan, I got a follow-on question. I mean, those are great points about the, you know, the sustainability of the cotton period. But if you could tell me what are some like short proactive steps we could have the cotton industry or cotton growers use to explain that one. How would they just talk about that to their downstream customers?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I get it too. I mean, if I was a farmer, I'd probably be a lone wolf on the ranch and never want to talk to anybody because it's fun out there, right? Like, you know, that's land, that's the connection to land. But I do think if there's an openness and willingness to share, and I know that can sometimes feel uncomfortable, especially when you have regulation and regulators and you've got people looking in on your business. But if there's a willingness to share on best practice and what's going on and what is my commitment to land stewardship? What is my commitment to soil health? Am I using a complex rotation? Am I using a conservation tillage or a no tillage system? What percentage of my acreage? Or am I innovating by looking at different seed technology? Or am I innovating by thinking through my total inputs and doing a total farm model and actually participating in one of the different rating schemes, like say a field to market, participating in E3 is a great example, right? Like being a part of one of these cooperative initiatives, diving in, participating fully, having some sort of willingness to be transparent on data sharing and story sharing and share those best practices. I mean, I'm just impressed by the sheer number of growers that are willing to share on best practices, willing to allow for other farmers to replicate their success stories in soil health with total farm productivity, because it's all economics as in addition to those sustainability benefits. And we have to recognize that if something is challenging a sustainability performance issue, but it's going to be a significant amount of cost to change that, that might not be the right course of action at that given time across the total acreage that farmer's managing. So I think there's a lot of nuance, and it just starts with a real willingness to be transparent, because in this world, right, in this modern age, transparency is the only thing we have, right? Like you can fly a drone over a farmer's field. You can, look somebody up on the internet. You know, you can do whatever you want. Like the digital landscape has level set our ability for privacy. So, I think a willingness to share in best practice is what's going to help us move the needle forward.
Well, Rowan, I mean, you talked about some of the challenges. I mean, about within this, and maybe you could share more about different challenges that the industry are facing, but how do you see What are you seeing certain brands, what are certain brands doing to make a difference and be a positive force for change in support of the environment? And we've talked about some things that maybe they're not doing, but what are some things they're doing that make them a positive force for change? And also a follow-on question, because you're getting ready to go into the food industry. How does the food industry utilize sustainability?
Yeah, great questions. Yeah, I mean, I think, there's a lot of activity focused on the operational footprint. So every organization, brands are looking at, how is it that we manage and govern everything related to our own energy consumption? We're seeing a massive uptick in renewables, renewable purchase and application and everything from distribution centers to retail store environment, some new and novel creative and innovative contractual mechanisms in this space. Just like, in the past, if you wanted a solar system, I have to spend what, $8 million? That's a lot of money. Do I have that money? Not really. I can't do the project. That conversation has shifted and changed, where service providers are competitive out there offering financing where you don't have to put up the CapEx investment, but what, I still get a discount to my operating expense. Those kinds of evolutions of relationships and business relationships to execute against decarbonization technology, whether it be renewables, whether it be energy efficient HVAC or, architectural wind that sits on the edge of the parapet, whether it just be a passive form of building insulation, all of these things still exist within our wheelhouse. There's so many intervention strategies that brands are pursuing and adopting. When it comes to product, it's right. It's like focusing in and leaning into supply chain. This is a more challenging conversation, but talking with suppliers, vendors, people that build the product, not just tier one, but tier two, tier three, and sort of where are those materials coming from? How are they being utilized? What is your energy footprint? And getting to the bottom of that can be really uncomfortable, right? Like, what does it look like? What are the KWHs per widget that you push out to my business and the product that I own? Let's talk about that. Can you do better? You don't have any ideas? Here's some ideas, right? There starts an entire conversation about supply chain management and engagement, where we're asking each other as business partners within a value chain to do better. And that's going on. And it's exciting to see that commitment to what we call scope 3 emissions within the ESG reporting world, but just this supply chain connectivity that we are all connected. It's not just supply chain, it's value chain, right? The value that we create in each local geography, but then as a product vertical in totality. And I think that having that conversation with suppliers up and down and all the way into rethinking. It's more than just regulation, and it's more than just decarbonization. This is product innovation for the future. And I think that's where it takes us, right? It's like when you're focused on doing your business leaner and greener, you know, operationally, when you're focused on working with your suppliers to be leaner and greener, the outcome ultimately, and not to oversimplify, is that we get to more innovative product. We get to product that doesn't have such a heavy burden on the planet. We get to reach customers with a willingness to pay and a deep green consumer ethic that value this activity. And at the end of the day, we're able to create a lot of added value for all stakeholders. So,
well, thank you. That's incredible, Rowan. I mean, that's just a great example of things that we can do to be a positive force for change. I mean, I love that. So thank you very much. Very all-encompassing. It's not just one program, but it's more multifaceted. I like the way you put that. I just want to thank, you know, both you and Bob today for this discussion. Thank you, Rowan Atwood, for being with us. I mean, we have learned so much from you today, and you've shared so much about sustainability practices and your experience. What a great discussion. So thank you for joining us. What's the best way for our listeners to reach out to you should they have further questions or want to connect?
Yeah. You know, LinkedIn probably right now is the best, just seeing that kind of free agenting until next week, but excited to connect with people and continue the dialogue and any of the tentacles that are of interest. So let's do LinkedIn or Twitter, either one.
Well, great. Well, thank you for that, Rowan. What is your, real quick, what's your Twitter handle?
Rowan Atwood, RoianAtwood.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for sharing that. Well, I also like to thank you, our listeners, for joining us today and hope that you enjoyed this show. Should you have any questions about the E3 Cotton program or sustainability, please email me at e3cotton@basf.com. Also, please visit us on Instagram and Facebook at E3 Sustainable Cotton. And like our post, follow us, and learn more about how we're trying to help grow the sustainable cotton movement and help grow sustainability in agriculture at large. So thank you very much. We hope to see you all next time. Thanks again for joining.